Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. Two for one, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Sign Guy and QT with you as normal. There's a couple of shows happening out there. You have PSW happening in Piedmont, Alabama later today. Tomorrow night, you have wrestling in Tuscaloosa, Mississippi with Diamond Championship Wrestling. So if there's some wrestling near you and it seems like it's a safe idea to go check it out, definitely go support what the independents are trying to do as we come out of the lockdown. And without further ado, I want to welcome our guest today. He is a fine official out of Tennessee. He referees for numerous promotions in numerous states. Patrick Young, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, man. It's an honor. Thank you.
Well, since today's your first time with us, I will start you out with our traditional first-timer question. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
Well, I was born and raised in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the home of Terry Bam Bam Gordy. And that was the big deal for me, was I would see Burt Prentice and Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Burt Prentice would bring down and do USA Championship Wrestling from Nashville. He would come down to Chattanooga, and they all would book Terry Gordy. And so for me, I had a lot of run-ins with him through Smoky Mountain Wrestling when they did their shows in North Georgia, Chattanooga, and, you know, Knoxville's not, but just an hour and 45 minutes away. And it was just really cool, man. And he was a great guy. And I was running into him a lot, even going to the YMCA, because that's where he worked out. And he's just, as a kid, man, he was larger than life. And we were an NWA household, and so NWA, then WCW, so I knew who the Fabulous Freebirds were. And so that was cool, man. That was just really awesome, and that's what opened the door for me, was like, I got to do this.
Now, you've been in quite a few different promotions in your time in the wrestling business, and we all know that in different promotions in different parts of the country, fans like different styles of wrestling. They like different genres of wrestling. Do you have a particular favorite style that most attracts you to work?
I enjoyed going up about 3 or 4 years ago. I went up and did a show for Harley Race. And it was the Night of Champions when he had Ric Flair there, and I just happened to be there and got brought in to do a match, kind of last-minute thing. I wanted to go because I had been around Ric Flair numerous times, but I had never met Harley Race, and I just felt like, man, this is a great honor and opportunity. And so I drove up to St. Louis and ended up kind of working behind the scenes in the show and doing some stuff, not in-ring-wise, but still. That was just really cool. And Bobby Eaton, who now is back in Knoxville, but Bobby Eaton at the time was staying up in St. Louis. And Bobby Eaton is a huge, huge friend of mine and a great man. And Bobby Eaton is exactly what Stone Cold Steve Austin and a bunch of others have come out and said, Bobby Eaton is the nicest guy you will ever meet in this business. And Bobby Eaton went out of his way for a little greenhorn like me in a high school gymnasium in Knoxville to say, hey, here's my phone number. Give me a call. And that was it, dude. And Bobby Eaton, I did a lot of work with him, kind of rubbing elbows with him and some of his people, and Brian Thompson. And just that's the thing, is to get that rub from somebody and then to have one of your heroes look at you and say, hey, man, you're doing a good job even as a referee. Keep up the hard work. And so that was really cool. And so, yeah, it just – Bobby gave me a call and said, hey, you know, come on up. And I did, and it's the first time I'd ever had anything to do with World League Wrestling. And unfortunately, you know, Harley has passed. But, God, their style is just – it's far-fetched beyond more than you could imagine. It's a lot more – of the old school, you know, style mentality. And Harley Race always said, shut up and wrestle. And that was his motto for World League Wrestling, and shut up and wrestle. So I liked it. I enjoyed it. It taught young kids to tell a story with their matches, not necessarily grabbing a microphone every 10 seconds.
Ow. As someone that's been around for a while, we know that in wrestling, injuries are just a natural part of the business. You're going to get some if you're in there for any length of time. As a referee, have you had very many injuries yourself?
I have. I've quite a few broke noses, couple of concussions, luckily, I haven't had any serious broke bones, but just the basics of the concussions and things like that, I've been lucky. Let's put it that way. I've been very lucky.
I'm sure you've also been in the ring when some of the wrestlers have been injured. What's some of the more serious injuries you've seen during the course of a match you officiated?
I was a part of a Taipei death match, and that was one of the most brutal things that I have ever been a part of. It was to the point that I wear amateur wrestling shoes. I don't wear wrestling boots. I don't wear tennis shoes. I feel that I can grip the mat and move around better in the ring with amateur wrestling shoes. And during that match, there was so much blood and there was so much thumbtacks that when I got to the back, I was picking it out of my feet. It had gone through my shoes and all the way into my feet. And that was probably the most brutal injuries that two men suffered, because they just laid into each other and shredded basically their entire faces off. It was bad. It was very bad.
That sounds like a rough day at the office right there.
That was rough, man. That was rough.
Now, in this day and age, we know a lot more about bloodborne pathogens than we did even just 5 to 10 years ago. There's been controversy in wrestling on if there is a place for blood in the sport anymore or not. Where do you personally stand as far as having blood in matches and this era of wrestling?
Well, a year before WWE ever implemented it and before TNA ever implemented it, I was using gloves whenever an opponent got busted open, because I understood that. I came from that background of understanding that. And so when they implemented that, I thought that was great for the business as a whole. Blood is a major part of wrestling. It adds to a match so much more than you could ever imagine. I think one of the most recent matches is when you go back and you see Cody Rhodes against Dustin Rhodes, and they had that big build-up a year or two ago, and they just bled like stuffed pigs. I mean, they're just pouring blood. But you know what? It told a story. It had meaning. It wasn't just them going out there and beating the hell out of each other. It told a story. And I'm all about story wrestling. I love the fact of watching WrestleMania 25, Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, because that's a story from start to finish. you can put on a match that tells a story, and you're not having to say a word. Your actions are doing it, and I think that's great.
Speaking of Cody and Dustin, they, of course, are the cornerstones of AEW, which has been running for a little bit over a year. They are about 10 months on national TV there on the TNT network. They've been putting out some quality product all the way through, including here in the pandemic era. What do you think of the AEW product overall?
I think AEW is owning the wrestling business right now. I genuinely think that. I think that they have Tony Khan, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, just all of them. They have put together something that is groundbreaking, but classic, new, but, you know, but a little bit old school. It has a WCW feel mentality to it, but at the same time, it's so new and vibrant that I think it's going to work, and I think it's already working, but I think it's going to work to where Vince needs to really start paying attention, man. This company is here. It's here to stay. Tony Khan he's got the open checkbook, and it's the closest thing to my belief of WCW will ever get again.
One of the things that has been a staple in pro wrestling since the beginning of pro wrestling is the Battle Royal. I know some people on the business side of wrestling enjoy Battle Royals. Some of them do not. Fans typically enjoy a Battle Royal. As a referee, do you enjoy doing the Battle Royals? And do you see any specific criteria for doing a Battle Royal that you wouldn't normally have to do in a standard match?
Yeah, as a Battle Royal, if you're from the referee standpoint, it's kind of difficult because you don't want to be blocking the crowd. So you got to kneel down, and you got to, you know, your face level with the ring mat, and you're trying to make sure this audience behind you can still see and pay attention to what's going on. I love doing Battle Royals, man. I think they're great, very entertaining. There's not a Battle Royal that I'm not a part of that I don't think of somebody like Andre the Giant or Big John Studd or one of those types. That if you want to go back to Haystacks Calhoun, if you can't tell, I love the history of wrestling. I'm a very big wrestling historian, and so that means a lot to me to be able to be a part of something like that these great guys have been a part of and basically broke ground on. I mean, the Battle Royal was more or less put together to make Andre the Giant just stand out among any others back in the territory days. So I thought that was, you know, that shit's cool, man. I love professional wrestling more than anything, and I love the history of professional wrestling. And so, yeah, but back to your question, looking at the mat and, you know, your eye level with the mat, making sure the fans can see you, it's very different. It's very unique. But, yeah, I enjoy it.
In the area where you are in the southeast part of the United States, the fans tend to be a lot more into professional wrestling and a lot more vocal when they are displeased. It is a different climate usually than you find in other parts of the country. Have you had to deal with irate fans during the course of your career?
I have. I also have done a few actual wrestling matches, and I'm also known as a manager to some degree as well. But I've held many hats in professional wrestling. But one night to build a story, I had a nightstick, and I attacked a man's valet right in the back of the neck. I hit her straight square with the nightstick and proceeded to stand over her and just keep plowing away. And then I grabbed the microphone and said, I hope I broke her neck. And they had to escort me out of the building because I had caused a riot. So in the South, they're, you know, they're very protective of women, and they're very protective of the fact that if they like you, they like you. If they don't like you, you're not going to get away with jack squat. So, yeah, I've been in a few crazy scenarios with fans, a couple jumping the guardrail, that kind of stuff, where fans get into it a little too much. But yeah, that was probably the most recent one that it really got way out of hand.
When you have a fan jump over the barricade and they're trying to get in the ring, historically the referee was the first line of defense and would have to attempt to stop that fan until security got them. Did you ever have to do that role and take a fan down and hold them until somebody could take them away?
I have done that. And I try to pay attention and stop it before they even get in the ring. I've caught a couple of guys right in the temple with a kick and made them see stars just enough for security to be able to get to them. So that way I didn't have to get too out of hand with stopping the match or other people having to get involved or all that. But there's been one or two that's actually got into the ring that I've had to take down and put a chokehold on until security got there to grab them. Here's the thing for most fans that don't understand. Let me go ahead and throw that out there. You hear it, but you don't actually understand it, I think, at times, or some don't. Once you cross that guardrail, you're in my business. You're in my territory, and all bets are off. You can stand over that guardrail, and you can cuss me, you can spit at me, whatever. But when you cross that guardrail, all bets are off, and my hands are not going to be responsible for what happens to you.
One of the other things about pro wrestling that has been going on since the dawn of pro wrestling, and it has been and remains to this day controversial, is dating within the business. We've seen lots of examples of relationships that have been destroyed because the wrestling business. We've seen a few examples of where things worked out and there were happy endings of it. On the independent scene, it seems like it's the same as all the major companies where there's the inevitable inter-office dating. Do you have any personal opinions on the relation of dating in professional wrestling?
No, not really, because it's, I mean, you're going to like, you know, who you like. You're going to want to date whoever you want to date. And when you're confined in a car with, you know, four other people, or a van with, you know, six other people, and three of them are girls and are females, and you're going up and down the road and you're sharing hotel rooms and you're trying to make your $20 and get your name out there, dating's going to happen. And you're going to be like, hey, you want to go grab a burger alone? Yeah, okay. You know, it happens. It does. And that's not really going to stop. I mean, now if you ask, hey, you want to go grab a burger, and she's like, no, then don't. It's done. Let it go, you know. But I mean, dating's going to happen. There's no way to prevent it. You know, look at Ric Flair. Ric Flair, yeah, that speaks volumes in itself, that you're either dating while you're on the road or you're getting divorced because of what's going on when you're on the road. So,
we have a game on the show that we like to play. We call it Bring On to Choice, Bring On to Funk. I will ask you a series of two options, and the one that you most prefer personally is the answer. Are you prepared to play around and bring on the choice, bring on the funk?
Yeah, man.
All right, here we go. Suplex or body slam?
Body slam.
Pin or submission?
Pin.
Tights or singlet?
Tights.
Jazz or rap?
Jazz.
Pie or cake?
Pie.
Zoo or museum?
Museum.
Jim Duggan or Jimmy Snuka?
Jimmy Snuka.
Claw hole or full Nelson?
Claw hole.
18-foot ring or 16-foot ring?
18.
All right, and that concludes the round to bring on the choice, bring on the funk. Now, as someone that has done multiple roles in wrestling and several promotions, I'm sure you're aware of the importance of a good ring announcer. They're the face of the company. They are who the fans usually look at, whether rightly or wrongly, is sort of the authority figure on a show a lot of times. They're vital to getting information to fans so the fans know how to support the company and spend their money. I'm sure you've been around a great number of them. Who are some of the better ring announcers you've worked with that you think should be getting more opportunities?
Well, I've been in the shadows of great ring announcers such as Howard Finkel and things like that. But there's a new wave of – I can't pick out one specifically, but there's a new wave of younger indie female ring announcers that are coming up that I think are doing fantastic. And I think that that's a great opportunity to be a ring announcer as a whole, because I've been there. I've done that for indie shows. It's a hard job. Believe it or not, it's a hard job. And I think that it is fantastic that we have this new wave of ring announcers. It's like valet. You know, how long was it you didn't see a valet? Now we're starting to see, you know, Penelope Ford on AEW and things like that, that are valets are starting to make somewhat of a comeback. And I like that. A manager role as a whole is something that every wrestler to some degree is going to encounter in their career.
One of the places that I believe you hit in your day is Ohio Valley Wrestling, and they, for the last 20 years, have been one of the more major independent companies and training centers. They've changed ownership a few times in the last decade or so, but what do you feel about what OVW is doing current day?
I haven't actually kept up with OVW current day. I was just lucky enough to have been a part of one of their shows when they came to Knoxville, and I got the call, and Jim Cornette needed a referee, and I had a few run-ins with Jim in the past, and Jim Cornette has now we've gone on to become somewhat, you know, friends, acquaintances, I guess, more than just, hey, I'm sitting in the locker room with you. At least we know each other's name. Let's put it that way. I got that opportunity, and I enjoyed the hell out of it. I made the best of my opportunity, and I'm sitting there with Danny Davis, who was there at the time. You know, everybody knows, you know, the wrestling referee, Danny Davis. And like I said, I'm looking over in the corner, and there's Bobby Eaton. And Bobby Eaton obviously was impressed with what I did that night. So it was a great honor to be a part of it. And they haven't really came back down south. I don't know what went down around that time, or at least not anywhere near close to me. But I would love to get back and see what talent they've got and what talent's coming up.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know he has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to him.
Thank you, Steve. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Patrick, I'd like to congratulate you for your participation with Sign Guy on Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk. You were our rare participant who stuck with the one-word choice and did not explain their choice. This only has happened like 6 times in our last 6 years, where the participant picks or chooses a choice and sticks with it and says nothing else. Would you like to play a expanded word association? I mean, Bring On the Choice, Bring On the Funk, a short version.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The first one, Big Cat, Ernie Ladd, or King Kong Bundy?
Bundy,
okay. Fast Times at Ridgemont High or The Office? Space.
Fast Times, Ridgemont High.
Okay. Snickers or Twinkie?
Snickers.
All right. And the last one, County Fair or?
County Fair.
Okay, County Fair. You did very well in our expanded version. Very nice. Okay. Well, Patrick, how many wrestling T-shirts do you have, and would one of them be from a wrestler known as Pineapple Pete or the wrestler formerly known as Sugar Dunkerton? How many T-shirts?
I have probably 400 or 500. I mean, I have them back from when I was, you know, a young kid wearing my Goldberg or DDP shirt or wearing my Four Horsemen shirt back in the late 80s. And those were packed away at my parents' house. Those weren't. So, I mean, if we're counting those in there, yeah, probably about 400.
Wow. I was going to ask if you specifically hired a closet organizer just for your T-shirts. That was my next question.
No, my parents pretty much took care of that. The vacuum seal bag really is a great thing for wrestling T-shirts, just FYI, because that will seal up and take away so much extra space that you can just stack it on top of each other. It's in one part of the closet and go on about your business. So that's basically what my mother did, was vacuum seal those vacuum seal Ziploc bags. And so that's where a lot of my wrestling shirts are. I still have my few that I wear. You know, I love my Andy Kaufman shirt. I wear it all the time. I'm a big Memphis guy, and I'm a big world-class guy. So,
wow. Did you ever get to meet Andy Kaufman?
I did not get to meet Andy Kaufman. And that's I've said it time and time again. The feud between Andy Kaufman and Jerry Lawler is, number one, my favorite feud of all time. And number two, it's the first time I actually sat down and broke down step by step, event by event, and the thought process behind it to make people do what they did to get people to pay closer attention to it. I mean, that thing ended up being on national television. And for that to be in the time frame that it was in, and it get that much exposure, that speaks volumes for itself.
Yeah, I liked it where he was out in Hollywood and he was by his poolside, and he was ripping on Jerry Lawler, and he said, "Come here, you are a woman," and he goes, "How tall are you?" And the woman replied, 6'2". How much do you weigh?" And she said something like 250 pounds. And he goes, "See, Lawler, she's bigger than you are. Look what I'm going to do to her." And he wrestled her to the ground by the pool. And someone came out and said, "Stop it. You're going to hurt her." Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yes. Oh, okay. Now, of all your T-shirts, you mentioned 400 or 500. How many are autographed?
Oh, wow. Not many that I can actually remember. I actually have a lot of 8x10 autographs. That's where I really collect. Anybody name-wise that I've done a show with, anybody legend-wise that I've done a show with, anybody that I feel has immense potential of turning into something great, I get a picture with them, and I get an 8x10 autograph of them. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's a mark thing to do. First of all, I hate that term mark, okay? Get that crap out of here. There's no such thing as a mark, and here's why. Because you got in this business because you're a fan. And being a mark, you're a fan. If I'm sitting there and I'm looking across the, you know, the room and Bobby Eaton sitting there, hell, I'm going to go up and introduce myself and say, listen, hey, I'm a fan. I just, you know, I wanted to congratulate you for everything you've accomplished in wrestling. I wanted to thank you for the sacrifices that you gave to do what you did for me to get in this business. And I want to say the best of luck to you as well. And things like that, you know, you're a fan, so don't use the term mark. I absolutely hate that. But going back to your question, no, I do a lot of 8x10s. That's more my thing, autographed-wise.
Oh, 8x10s, okay. All right, that's good. Okay. Well, Patrick, many wrestlers had an acting background in high school. Did you yourself belong to a drama club in high school?
Not really, no. I was more the sports athlete type. I didn't really do a lot of drama. I was brought in one time, one year only, to do the school play as an escaped convict. We were doing I don't even remember what it was back then, but I was the escaped convict. And the only reason was because they didn't have somebody big enough to be able to play that part. And they were like, oh, hey, you're doing it. So, but no, I didn't do a lot of drama.
Okay. All right. Are you a big fan of the cult classic by Roddy Piper, Hell Comes to Frogtown?
No, I'm not. I'm a bigger fan of They Live.
Oh, okay.
They Live is the greatest movie, in my opinion.
Yes, it was very futuristic. I think Piper has foretold the future.
Yes, absolutely. But no, I love They Live. I probably know that movie word for word.
Wow. Okay. All right. How many of your T-shirts in your collection would you trade to have an original print or an original film reel of They Live autographed by Piper? How many T-shirts would that mean to you? It was autographed by Piper.
300, 400. I'd probably give it all because I respect what that man did, and I was a huge fan of Roddy Piper.
Holy smokes, that's a lot. Okay, all right, very good. Okay, well, Patrick, you were raised on Smoky Mountain Wrestling and East Coast Wrestling in general. Speaking of Piper, can you tell us your earliest memory of West Coast wrestling, where such wrestlers as Roddy Piper, Rip Oliver, Sam Oliver Bass, Jesse Ventura, and the Kangaroos were in their 20s when they got their start? What was your earliest memory of West Coast wrestling?
Ah, man. I think it was right around 94. 93, 94, somewhere right in there. We had the winter of 93. The blizzard of 93 hit the entire East Coast, and there wasn't anything on TV. And NASCAR had stopped, which is a big thing here in the South, obviously. Or back in the day it was. It's crap now. But sports had stopped. Wrestling was pretty much had stopped, and so I'm flipping around as a kid, flipping through the television with me and my dad and mom, and came across some wrestling from out west, and it was more, I don't even remember the name of it, truthfully. I think they had like maybe 40, 50 people, and it was done studio style. But it's, I enjoy championship wrestling from Hollywood right now. I think that's doing great things to build young talent. But to go back to the Out West stuff, that was probably my earliest memory of it.
Okay, 94. I believe I remember that blizzard. I was stationed in Governor's Island, New York, and I remember having to wade through snowdrifts about up to my kneecap to serve breakfast on a Coast Guard cutter, 1994, at Governor's Island, New York.
Because of all the mountains here, it got trapped in, and so it just kept piling and piling and piling on top of each other, and we ended up having it to where it was almost, I guess you could say, 5 feet. And as a kid, I mean, I couldn't go out in it because I'd freeze to death. I mean, I went out into it as it, you know, right when it was going on at like the 2 feet mark, but it just got so big. As a kid, I remember, I mean, I don't know the exact measurements or whatever, and that's been 20 something years ago, 30 something years ago, practically. But yeah, I just remember, you know, looking out the window and seeing it just keep going and going, and it's over the front door, and it's over the, you know, it's up to where the windows are now, and it just, I had never seen snow like that or since.
Wow. Nice. Okay. Now, was this in, when you were in Chattanooga?
Yes, I was born and raised and still live in Chattanooga to this day. Very proud to be in Chattanooga. And, but yeah, it's great because we're right here. We're in between the mountains of the Smoky Mountains, and you're in between the mountains of coming off of trying to head out west towards, you know, Nashville, because you have Mont Eagle Mountain, you have Lookout Mountain, you have the Smoky Mountains, you have the Blue Ridge Mountains. Chattanooga is just basically engulfed in mountains. And so once it's here, it's not like it's got any place to melt away and run off to. It's kind of like, well, the sun's just going to have to melt it. And that's kind of the situation we were in. I mean, Chattanooga's a huge city. You know, don't get me wrong. It's not like a small town. But, you know, I go back to, been lucky enough to see, you know, film reels of Harry Thornton and News Channel 12 at the Memorial Auditorium here in Chattanooga with, you know, Lou Thesz coming in and promoting shows, and Harley Race coming in, and, you know, Pistol Pez Watley, and, you know, like I said, Bobby Eaton, he was trained by Tojo Yamamoto, and his first match was in the Memorial Auditorium here in Chattanooga, Tennessee, he says. And so that's, you know, there's a huge wrestling history here in Chattanooga and here in the Tennessee itself, in the Tennessee Valley. And so, yeah, no, I looking back, man, it was a wild ride. It was a very wild ride for a lot of people. We were without power for, I would say, almost a week. So, you know, think back on that. Me, mom, and dad, a Coleman lantern and a Coleman stove, and we basically sealed off the entire house to just the living room. And so me, mom, dad, and the dog. And that's what we had all, you know, for almost five days to a week.
Jeez, man, now I know this isn't a wrestling question, but what altitude is Chattanooga at? Are they at about 1,000 feet? 1,200?
I would say so, yeah, because I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but yeah, I would say so. I mean, because those dips, you ask any truck driver, and they're going to tell you, the worst trip you ever have to take if you're driving an 18-wheeler is going over Mont Eagle Mountain, because it just, you're on top of it, and then you drop off, and you drop off, there's more 18-wheeler wrecks coming off of Mont Eagle Mountain than anywhere in the entire United States of America. And that's how much of – that's how the – I mean, that's just how basically the mountains are around here. So it's a pretty big – you know, we're pretty low down there in between everybody else. We're not high up unless you – you know, you're climbing the mountains or going up in the mountains.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, a little bit of geography I've learned today. Very nice. Okay. Well, Pat, we at Turnbuckle Turmoil have a Hall of Fame, and one of our recent inductees was the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan. Have you yourself ever met the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan?
I have. I met him. It was WrestleMania 33 weekend in Orlando, and we went to WrestleCon, and I looked over in the corner and happened to have saw him, and my buddy Alex goes, oh, hey, man, there's, you know, there's this person, there's that person, there's this, and I was like, no, fuck that, pardon my French. I was like, there's Kevin Sullivan over there, and so that, I made a beeline for there, and Kevin Sullivan was definitely, I guess, one of the guys growing up, it just terrified the hell out of me. And so, I mean, no, I'm not exaggerating. He really did. He just scared me to death. And if you look on my Facebook page, I'm sure there's a picture out there with me and Kevin Sullivan. But I just got to go over and pick his brain for about 10 minutes. And so that was really cool. That was a pretty cool ordeal for me. But, yeah, Kevin Sullivan, I think, did some great stuff with his stuff in Florida, you know, people actually believing he was a devil worshiper and all this. He's, you know, running around with snakes and stuff. If you look back in the archives, Kevin Sullivan was ahead of his time, way ahead of his time.
Wow. All right. Well, I'm glad we inducted him into the Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Fame. That was a wise choice. Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, Patrick, I saw your YouTube video entitled Beautiful Bobby Eaton and the Centerfolds, and this was posted to YouTube on July 13th, 2015, and it took place for SSPW in Eaton, Georgia. Now, at the 42-second mark, one of the centerfolds bulldogged you into the mat face first. This was after Beautiful Bobby took a cheap shot on you to put you down on the mat in the first place. Do you remember which centerfold went to the top rope, did a leg drop on you? Yes. Who was that did a leg drop on you from the top rope? That's what I'm asking.
Okay. That was Frenchy Riviera, better known as Big Bubba back in the day. And if you look back in your Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Keith Arden, he's better known as Keith Arden, his brother John Arden. And Luke Patterson is the one that DDT'd me. And Frenchy Riviera at that time was, I would say, 350 and hit an Alabama Jam off the top rope. And, but that was one of those things, man, like, you know, hey, I called Bobby, we're at this show, and it's, when I say it's small, it's small. I mean, we were doing well to draw 30 people, and they asked, you know, hey, we got to get somebody in here. I was like, okay, we'll do a cage. And I picked up the phone and called Bobby. He's like, hey, I'm there. And we set this thing up to where, as a referee, I just kept getting nailed every single Saturday night to where I'd had enough. And I was bringing in my own personal bodyguard, and that was Beautiful Bobby. And, so he gets there, and then, you know, obviously money talks, and he turns on me. And, but, that was a tribute night, I guess, for us as the boys, to pay tribute to someone like Bobby Eaton.
And you say that move, that from the top rope was the Alabama Jam?
Yes, that's what Bobby Eaton's top rope leg drop was. And that was the reason Frenchie Riviera went up to do it, to pay tribute to Bobby. Bobby Eaton always used the DDT, the swinging neck breaker, and the Alabama Jam, which was a top rope leg drop, which I think the last person I've seen use it was, God, what was his name? What was the dance? Some dancing dude in WWE. I don't know. Anyway, he called it the last dance. Fandango. Oh, there you go. Fandango. He was the last one that he does the top rope leg drop. And the Alabama Jam, that was the original right there, was Bobby Eaton.
Did that stun you into semi-consciousness?
yeah, I actually busted my face a little bit on the side of my nose. Yeah, it was not something that, yeah, hey, it happens, okay? Stuff happens. But it was, everything was good. Everything was fine. But it was a memorable moment for me to be able to share the ring with one of my heroes. And so, I'm sorry, to what?
You had to go for it at that time, yes.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that was the thing. It wasn't just for me. It was, you know, the boys in the back there too. It was like, man, this is, Patrick actually pulled this off. Patrick's got him coming, you know. We definitely want to do something for him. And I think that night, which is a small town, man, small town. Eaton, Georgia is maybe 300 people at that, and every single person in town was there that night. So I was driving in and out every Saturday night for a little bit, just to put on the show and help with it. It's no longer a show anymore. But that show was done in a tiny little barn, if that gives you an idea. There you go.
Wow, a barn. Okay.
It was in a barn. It's not even, this isn't a building. This is a barn. So there you go.
Holy smokes. Were there any chickens running around this barn named Bernadette? Bernadette
there
the
was
chicken?
Not, no. No, no, there was not.
I only
popped up once or twice, but that was about it.
Okay. I only ask you this because there's a tag team out here in Idaho called the Spud Brothers that have a chicken named Bernadette. That's a reason.
Really? I'll need to check into that because I'm intrigued now. I'm all about some animal mascots, so I need to check that out.
Well, I think Sign Guy can send you a video of the Spud Brothers that you will find very entertaining. The Spud Brothers.
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, good. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Patrick, I also saw your YouTube video entitled Balthazar at Superstars of Wrestling 2 in Rome, Georgia, USA 2014. Now, the announcer said that Balthazar was from Switzerland. Were you able to confirm that he was from maybe Geneva?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. All right.
Brother, I have no idea. It's the first time I've ever met him, and it's the last time I ever met him. I have not done a show with him since. So I do not know. To be completely honest with you, I have no idea.
Okay. Patrick, before Balthazar made his appearance, two druids walked down the ramp holding what looked like fiat steering wheels, and they set the stage for Balthazar's entrance. My question is, have you seen the movie Spinal Tap? And if so, did you see them perform the movie Stonehenge?
That, you know, yes. Now that you mention it, there's a lot of similarities there.
Okay. Well, Patrick, in your opinion, could these two druids that flanked the entrance ramp that Balthazar walked down, could they be the same druids that danced on the Stonehenge stage as youngsters? Could they have grown up and continued this druid type thing?
Possibly.
Oh, okay.
Who knows? Possibly. Who knows?
Well, Patrick, given the fact that Balthazar was probably a vampire, did you have cloves of garlic under your zebra stripes to keep Balthazar at bay?
No, if he came near me, I was just going to rip his fangs out.
Whoa! Wow! Holy smoke. Okay. All right. Well, Patrick, did Balthazar remind you of the WWE superstar Gangrel? Did he remind you of him?
Very much so.
Wow. All right. Very much so. Okay. All right. Well, Patrick, we often talk about entrance music on this show. And do you believe there will one day be entrance music for referees?
I hope not. And here's why. You can't have a match without a referee. The referee is the third person in the ring, or the fifth person if it's a tag team, or the ninth person if it's a four-way tag, whatever. You can go on and go so forth. But the referee is not there to get the shine. The referee is there to help add to a match. I know you go down the line, there's Danny Davis, you know, referee Tommy Young from NWA, you know, you got Earl Hebner, some legendary referees that people know by name. But I think that that's kind of where it needs to stay. I don't think that referees need to be having entrance music or things like that.
Okay, well said. And I have asked that question before for other referees, and they pretty much mirror your answer and are in agreement there. Okay. Well, Patrick, it's been good talking with you. I will send myself a reminder to Sign Guy to hopefully send you a video of the Spud Brothers. And if you have time, you might want to go back and look up Spinal Tap's Stonehenge song.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay. Okay, and stay away from that Balthazar. He looks very spooky.
Yeah, he was a little out there.
All right. Okay, back to you, Sean Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Patrick, we got a few minutes left, and I want to make sure you have ample time. So if there's anything you want to say to our listeners, plug and promote anything and everything, any upcoming appearances, social medias, merchandise, your favorite bakery, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
You can find me on Facebook at Patrick Young or Patrick Young Wrestling. You know, they'll show me with Tommy Dreamer and Stevie Richard. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Ref Patrick Young, but you can definitely check me out even more at Retro Wrestling Podcast. Listen to us, you know, on there. We have a great podcast that we've been doing for quite a few years now, and three or four. And so it's the Howard Stern of podcasts. Let's put it that way. We are unfiltered. If there is a curse word that offends you, do not listen, because we will probably say it. But yeah, check it out, Retro Wrestling Podcast, with me as, you know, referee Patrick Young and intern Alex. You can find us at RetroWrestlingPodcast.com online. Retro Wrestling Podcast on Facebook and Twitter. and we are proud to be sponsored by PowerSlam TV. If you go to PowerSlam TV, put in the discount coupon code of Retro Wrestling, and you'll get a month for free. So we've been very honored to have teamed up with PowerSlam TV for the past year. So you definitely want to check it out. It's probably the next step from the WWE Network. So they have a ton of footage from indie scenes, from documentaries of like high spots and things like that. So PowerSlam.tv, use the promo code Retro Wrestling, and you'll get a month for free.
Well, Patrick, I want to thank you very much for being on our show today. We appreciate having you with us, and I want to wish you the best of luck as you continue your career. Maybe at some point we'll cross paths in a locker room somewhere.
Absolutely, brother. I look forward to it.
I do too. Fans, definitely check out the podcast. And if Patrick's going to be officiating on a show near you, go support him. Buy yourself a ticket and watch some wrestling. If you see some wrestling happening near you and it seems like a safe thing to do, go support the independents as they're easing back into live events. Maybe pick up some merchandise for some people if you happen to know a wrestler has some available. Continue to support. And we want to mention at the end here that we suffered a loss here in the wrestling world in the last few days. A few days ago, Dangerous Bull Don Basher, who most listeners of this show will know as legendary wrestler out of Indiana, promoter and wrestler for WCWO in Indianapolis, father of Joey Kid Owens, grandfather of Jonathan Wolf. He passed away at the age of 60 just a few days ago. We want to send our best wishes to his family and all of his colleagues and all of his fans. He definitely will be missed. And as we wrap up the show, we're going to toll the bell 10 times in honor of the Dangerous Bull, the original Indiana Kid, Don Basher.